This is PS You're Wrong, the podcast where you talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love. And we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
And I hope that you guys are all listening to this podcast in IMAX 70 millimeter. That's really the only way to listen to this. If you're, doing like a Dolby or a AMC laser, that's like not going to cut it.
You didn't even experience it, honestly.
Of the sound waves, like it cuts off top sound waves, bottom sound waves.
Confusing. Exactly. There's only one way to appreciate this, and every other thing, anyone telling you differently, is garbage.
Right. So you have no idea what's going on.
So this is a first of its kind. We've recorded the entirety of this podcast in 70 minutes.
On film, yes.
On film that no one can see. The sound is captured too, so that's a first for IMAX everywhere.
Yes,
and you're welcome. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yes. We are talking about The Odyssey this week, Christopher Nolan's latest movie based on the 5,000-year-old book by Homer. I feel like, this was announced a couple of years ago. We've known that this movie has been coming for a while. Mm-hmm. I feel like people were sort of confused initially. And then as it's gotten closer, it's gotten just like more and more and more hype until it came out. And everyone has been like obsessed with it to the point where they're slightly going crazy, I think, in some places. But
I feel like it got mid reviews. I feel like
it got mid reviews. Shelby, it has a 95% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay, this wasn't his best.
It's made more money than any of his other movies, globally opening.
Yeah.
I think it might win Best Picture. Like, I feel like people are obsessed with it.
Like we're on different sides of the internet.
We're on different sides of the internet. What has the response been on your side of the internet?
I think in general, Christopher Nolan always struggles with women. And I think this movie highlights that. And it's not that people are like, this is a bad movie. I think it's less, this is the greatest movie. Like, I think it's more, it's good. I don't know. I think I've seen people... I have seen the people very excited about it, of course, but I've also seen reviews that are like nitpicky or kind of like picking apart the adaption of it or the choices made there, or kind of being like he chose style over substance, but not like in a way, like I don't want to position this as like, this is a divisive film. I think everyone across the board does agree that this is a very well-made film. But I'm pulled to a stop by how you framed it as like the this great success, because I have heard negative things and I just was flagging that.
I think because of the nature of the story and how many characters there are and how it's sort of like we're hopping from island to island. That there are definitely pieces of it that work better than others, and there are certain things that people are like, oh, I didn't like necessarily love that or whatever. But I feel like in general, everyone is like, it's absolutely gorgeous. Like the score, the cinematography, it's like all shot on location, the production design, that everybody for the most part likes all of the performances, or most of the performances, maybe not Tom Holland, but everybody else.
This is like where I'm confused. I feel like I have gotten, Tom Holland was good. Anne Hathaway was mid. Like I'm like, are we in the Twilight Zone? Did we watch two different versions of the movie? Like, are our internets like so filtered now that there's no crossover of
You're getting tweets that are saying that Anne Hathaway was bad in this movie.
Anne Hathaway was not good in this movie. I'm sorry to say it, Matt. I'm sorry. I read your review, and I don't blame her entirely. No, I can't start this way. Anne Hathaway. Anne Hathaway was not giving her best here. Anne Hathaway, this was such a mid Anne Hathaway performance. And I blame a lot of that on the script. I do. I don't think Christopher Nolan knew what the hell he was doing with Penelope. But she had three monologues, and they all had different themes. They all had a different person at the heart of them. And they went nowhere. So she looks serious, but she is over. She never disappeared. She was always Anne Hathaway as Penelope. I think everyone else in this movie did a good job of believably being their character. Anne Hathaway, I don't care how many times she spent learning how to weave an ancient, loom. I did not believe for a second that she had been suffering for 20 years, staving off these loser men. I felt like she was doing her most theater girly, I'm going to get this monologue and it's going to get me the lead role acting. I'm sorry.
Oh my God.
I stand by that.
I didn't realize that this was going to be a contentious episode that you were going to
come in there with. Yeah, I saw your love for her. It's like, wow, she has three Oscar-worthy monologues. And I'm like, tell me one thing that carried through those three monologues. Because she's flip-flopping on what she wants and who she is. Because it's like Christopher Nolan is just throwing anything at her to get the feminist off his back.
Okay. Well, I guess to sort of address the women problem.
Let's address the women. Yeah.
Let's address the women.
Let's do it.
Obviously, Christopher Nolan is better than some of his movies are better than others with women. For example, Tenet, a great movie for women.
Shut up! You can't be trolling me right now.
With fully realized female characters.
If everyone dies, then my child will die.
Yes, is I just rewatched Tenet because they were playing it in theaters. The perfect movie. I love it so much. But when that scene came, I was like, oh, this is so funny. A funny line.
Yeah.
No, Christopher Nolan has problems with female characters. We know this.
Yeah.
And I think he's sort of does his best when he manages to pick Ignore a movie them. Like Dunkirk.
Yeah.
Where there's no actually women involved. Well, the problem is that he always, I think his issue is that he's not good at writing women. He doesn't really understand them seemingly.
Yeah,
he's not interested in it. But then he feels compelled to have them in there for plot purposes or whatever, and then can't quite figure out what to do with them.
Yeah.
And so it especially with the movies that, I mean, he's written all of his movies, but especially with the ones that are his own, coming from his own mind, they're not coming from source material. It is sort of what are we doing here? Why is this character here that you clearly don't care about? Either give us more woman or less, but you can't just sort of throw some token women into the story and, have that work. The problem with The Odyssey is that the original version is doing that. So I felt going in that we were going to have this problem sort of no matter what, because either he's going to have to sort of invent a lot of things for these female characters to do, which, it would be fine if it was someone who was capable of doing that, but I don't think that he is. Or he sort of gives the women to do what they do in the book, which is not very much. And I felt the Anne Hathaway's Penelope, is her storyline is basically I'm stuck here. I think my husband might have died, but I don't want to remarry until I know that he has. And so I'm kind of trapped in this limbo. And as time goes on, the stress of that is building up and up and up and up and up. And So I think her wavering, like Anne Hathaway's character, like wavering in the movie makes sense because it's like, yeah, she's on one hand, she wants to move on, but on the other hand, she can't and she doesn't want to and she doesn't know what to do. And it's really stressful. And also for like a woman in that time period, like I don't think you're used to having a lot of agency. And then all of a sudden, you know, mm-hmm. you're thrust into this weird situation that you're not trained for because you've never like been taught to do anything, and now you're the person who's like waiting to make the biggest decision of the whole kingdom.
No, but she's not making a decision. She's stalling, which is fine. Well, I support the stalling. I think that makes Penelope as a historic figure interesting. The whole weaving and unweaving and trying to outsmart these dudes with what little she has is mm-hmm. interesting. My issue is that Christopher Nolan undercut, like he doesn't really capture that piece of it. He instead gives her these like feminist girl boss monologues that feel very empty. It feels very Oscar baity. It's like when she's yelling about like empty throne, I've been on it 20 years. I'm like, what are you talking about? You have spent this whole movie saying you don't want the throne. And now in your final like pièce de resistance, you're like, I can do this just as well as a man, but my doing it just as well as a man is like, except I don't know. It was, I didn't start this podcast thinking I would go on a tirade about the like performative nature of Penelope, Penelope's speeches.
You thought that you were going to go on a podcast speeches. With me. And yeah. You who don't,
I Anne didn't Hathaway's think that you could argue that this is Anne Hathaway's best acting.
I think, realistically,
do not agree with that.
Is this Anne Hathaway's best acting? No. I think that she is better in other movies, especially other movies where she has bigger roles and more to do. Yeah. However, I think that I think that her sort of staginess as an actress worked in this movie because it is like this grand, like epic,
but it's trying to be realist. It's trying to be the nitty gritty. It's like everyone else is like.
But I actually don't think that's true. I'm like, I think that there are certain people who are trying to be like more like modern sort of in their approach. But then there's other people who aren't. And I think that the movie works best when the people are a little bit more stagey. And I think Tom Holland, whether it's his face or his performance or the script, he's like general. The worst part because he doesn't feel like somebody who lived in BC. He feels like someone who is like living currently. Like
you think Tom Holland has iPhone face in a way?
I think Tom Holland has iPhone face, and I also think like him saying the word dad is so weird. I'm like,
I don't get the hang up on this dad thing.
I'm like. You should be using the word of father. All the complaints. Like in ancient Greece, but it's weird to be using the word dad.
In ancient Greece, what are you talking about? What ancient Greek do you know?
Like, no, I'm just like of the vibes. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like there, I feel like if you're doing the Odyssey and it's like, there's these gods and we're, you know, fighting for integrity, blah, 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 blah. Like there's like a formalness to it that then is weird when he is saying dad. You know, mm-hmm. it's mm-hmm. like dad is like a little too like valley girl in this, you know, it's like if somebody came into the movie and was
like what is Prince,
like, girl,
right.
why you been
what
doing
is, what does like, Prince no. Harry call his father? Yeah, like can you imagine him saying
right
dad?
Exactly,
but like, he does
like the fact that they went like that they chose the American accents over the British accents. I'm like, okay, sure, fine. Like I think if you are like use British accents, it automatically feels more like, you know, hoity-toity or whatnot. But I felt like there was something that didn't match the tone with Tom Holland that I felt Anne Hathaway did match the tone. But maybe the issue between the two of us is just that like I was like, Anne Hathaway's on the right path, everybody else follow her. Yeah. And you were like, Tom Holland's on the right path, everybody else follow
no,
her.
No, I'm not like, wow, Tom Holland was the best of the movie. But I will say that was a criticism, like dialing back, taking the personal out of it, is that was a criticism right away from the trailer, is like how modernized this script was, or how like Americanized it was, and like, why don't they just have British accents? Because historically, that's how we do historic epics, which is very Eurocentric.
Well,
yes. You guys need to dial, check that. But I think it's important to note that this was interpreted from a more recent translation of the Odyssey.
Yes.
It translated by a woman who, in her interpretation, was like, I didn't want to be colored by the Eurocentric translations before. I wanted to examine what this poem would have been like read to the normal people, to the average people, and how that language translates for us in a similar, you know, capacity. Because, yeah, it's like reading the King James version of the Bible and then reading a more modern, accessible version. And you're like, well, this isn't real. But the King James Bible version is no more real either. Like, right, it's all just like wrapped up in the way we view important, serious text as needing the heretofore and all of that. But in reality, these were average people just vibing. And like, you could say like, oh, Shakespeare is very poetic, but Shakespeare was also very casual. Like, he invented slang. Right. Like, he was throwing words around and being casual in his capacity too. So I never had a problem in this movie with the like casualifying of the Odyssey text. And I, even when the daddy scene happened between Robert Pattinson and Tom Holland, I wasn't like distracted or taken out by it. I felt like it made sense. Like, I respected that more than I would have if they'd stayed with this like falsified version we have of serious art, meaning British accents and big words.
I don't have a problem with the like the sort of Americanized version of this, or like, you know, the way people talk in general. I'm not like, oh, the Odyssey is like a text that we must like have reverence for, and like this slang is not doing it justice. I'm more like, we needed to pick a lane and then right. have everybody stick with that, because yeah. I think like you have like people like Samantha Morton, Lupita, like John Bernthal, Anne Hathaway, that are much more, I don't know, sort of like stagey, performative, like giving these like more, I don't know, sort of like regal kind of vibes. And then you have Tom Holland, who I think is like very far in the other direction, and it feels like he doesn't quite fit in. And then you have Robert Pattinson, who sort of like goes back and forth between the two. And I think Matt Damon like does a good job of kind of like keeping in the middle of all of that. But Matt Damon is basically just doing Matt Damon. Mm-hmm. And I think it, you know, it's just like his, it's very him mm-hmm. in anything. So I don't know, like, yeah, I felt like the performances were sort of, you know, here or there. But I thought, I really liked Anne Hathaway's couple of monologues. I felt like she was really, like, doing the most with what she had. And I appreciate when somebody is like, you know what, I have 3 scenes in this movie, and I'm going to be doing every damn thing I can with it. Because I also thought, a couple of the other performances that I really liked is Samantha Morton as Cersei, like, truly has 2 scenes. And I'm like, I feel like devours them. She's so fun and like a little kooky, but also like so sinister. But she also has all of this, like, you can just feel like thousands of years of sort of like, mm-hmm. grief and anger like exuding out of her, even though she's only in like
quickly wrapped up in about 3 minutes. Yeah, right. It was fascinating. I mean,
yeah. That's sort of every, like, I thought John Leguizamo also had like 2 really good scenes in the movie, and he's not in it that much.
It's not about the time, it's like about these character choices. Like, yeah, I think this story is always episodic. Like, that's the point. It's all these like random run-ins and horrific scenes. And I didn't have a problem with that. I think my issue with Cersei was like, I mean, a girl makes a solid point, but is then convinced by a nice guy to like turn it around literally 2 minutes in. And that's because the movie needed it to not last a year like it does in the books or whatever. And they didn't want to show Odysseus being a little bit of a, you know, playboy kind of guy. But so that, yeah, it just rang false when you give this woman a great speech about like, about men being monsters and pigs. And then she's like, okay, fine, you can go. I don't know. I was just like, okay, that's what you're going to give to Cersei. Like you give these women these monologues and then it doesn't feel real. It doesn't feel true to the story because you need to move the men along. And so I think that's like my frustration.
But I kind of felt like that was the same with everybody. Like, because the, like all of the Menelaus, like Agamemnon stuff, uh-huh. I also felt like was sort of yada-yadded through. And I think it's like each one of these things could be its own story. It's, I mean, it, like its own novel as like, you know, I mean, Cersei like is its own.
Yeah.
Like people have built out these characters so much. There's right. so much like rich mythology for all of them. And
like, no, I get it. But
I mean, does like, Christopher Nolan do a good job with women? Obviously not. Like I think the Helen of Troy plotline, also Zendaya is like has nothing yeah. to do in the movie. Yeah. It's like, what's the point of yeah. her here? Also Charlize Theron, like
Calypso's like, there zero, for the vibes.
Like,
yeah.
Like not
literally nothing
at all.
A gorgeous waste of talent. She looked beautiful. But no, I think that's like my point is you feel a lot more for I don't remember the Agamemnon, whatever their names are, Helen of Troy's husband, like when he's like monologuing about how his brother was killed, you feel his frustration and his fury at these women and you don't like him and you see how he treats Helen, who is seen as an object in his eyes. And there's a real through line in his character that makes sense, that he can honor Odysseus and feel no guilt for how he treats the people that he deems as unworthy of his pride and adoration, and that he glorifies the Odysseuses and the war and the general without having any sympathy for these women who, you know, yeah, if my partner threw my daughter to the waves for better winds, I would be plotting his death from day one. So like, I get that. And I liked like Elliot Page, I think was the best part of this movie. And wow. That character made sense. Like from beginning to end, you understand every emotion and frustration and rise and fall of like character. But when you take someone like Cersei, who's given the same amount of screen time, but all you can do is give her like a hoorah speech, but then immediately flip it without real explanation about why she agreed to let them go, except that he asked nice, like that's where it feels like, yeah, that doesn't make sense as a real character. And like Penelope, okay, your girl boss.
Well, he also
it.
Like threatens the bird.
Yeah, the little
whatever.
Bird.
It's like
right.
her sister
right.
or something. So it's yeah. like, I mean, was, and I was like, was that in, I don't remember that. Was that, I think that's a new addition, the bird
I
sister.
I don't know, yeah. Yeah, it just felt like he wanted these, and like watching TikTok react, it's like, holy hell, like Cersei, yes girl, yes queen. But if you take away that choice, then it's not like as powerful, right? Like she's like, okay, fine. And it's like, well, okay, I'll turn them back. You win this one. But I still think you're pig. Like, I don't know. I feel like there could have been more put into the wrestling of like their conversation. But instead, Odysseus is like, well, like you give those guys back to me.
But it's like a blackmail situation, isn't it? Because it's like, he's like, I'm going to kill your sister unless you turn them back.
Right, but he quickly lets go of the bird, and she's also a witch who could probably do a little bit. Okay, like I
mean, sure, but
I just think it was a really quick about turn, and it's like if you're gonna sit there on the beach and watch these men wrestle with whether or not to eat a cow for 10 minutes, then you probably could have given a little bit more to this like conversation with Cersei instead of one monologue and we're done. Like, it's like, I don't know if I can encapsulate exactly why it feels different, but there's just...
I mean, there's definitely more time spent with the men, especially the people who, like the Elliot Page character. I think that's not a character from the book. That's a character that was added for the movie.
Yeah.
But I think it is a character, I think, in Greek mythology somewhere else. Yeah, yeah. Sort of like co-opted in here. But I think part of the reason why that character works so well is because we keep coming back to him over and over and over again. It's like he's the first character that we see in the movie. And then we learn, oh, wait, he was like a kid who grew up in the island that Odysseus was on. And then they went to this war together. And then he comes back in the underworld. It's like, we get so much of his backstory that I think that's why, like, some of those scenes feel really, like, well done. Whereas with Circe, like, yes, we sort of get a little bit of the backstory, but she's only in that, like, one segment. I felt like another part that I was sort of, like, felt like was under baked a bit was, like, the Cyclops plot line. Because that feels like, okay, we sort of get there, and then we're only there for, like, a day, and then we're gone. And I was like, I remember this being more sort of, like, arduous here. And it was a little bit like, okay, if we're only on each of these islands for like 2 days, how did it take him 20 years to get back? Like, where is the,
it's
the time?
It's because he spent a year with Circe. He's like, there's something else he's doing. I swear. I haven't read it in a long time.
Well, they do cut like some of the various places that he goes, because it's like, okay, we can't be doing all of them. But even like the part where they meet the giants or whatever, it's sort of like they get off the boat, they're on the island for 20 minutes, and then they're back on the boat. Like, I think it's a 3-hour long movie, and they got a lot of stuff to get through.
Yeah.
And I felt like, while there's like, while I think that there are quibbles with the characterization of some of these characters and with some of the plot lines, that in general, for a book that is doing so much, I thought he was able to cover a lot of the stuff well. And also, I liked the addition of this sort of like, well, this war was stupid. Like, why are we so obsessed with war, which isn't in the original? And then I think, obviously, the reason why most people love this is that it is just like absolutely stunning in every capacity from a craft's point of view.
Yeah.
And so I'm like able to forgive some of the little, like, you know, things that I'm like, oh, I wish that this would have done better. Especially when I'm going into this movie with the lowest of expectations for these female characters, because you know that they're going to be bad.
Well, that's why I think we could totally talk about the technical, and I'd love to. But before, I just want to highlight, like, I think that I think my irritation with men trying to, like, throw a bone to us sisters is, like, is they want their little, it's like the scene in Avengers Endgame or whatever, where the girls all gather to, like, fight. It's like, this doesn't make sense. It's not necessarily, I honestly would have rather Circe be like indifferent than have some sort of hoorah feminist anthem, because that just rang false as when given the short amount of, you know, what needs to happen to get from point A to point B. To throw that in there just felt kind of like, it just jolted me out of the story, because it felt so performative for what he wanted the reaction of the audience to be. Like, it was very self-aware of, I need a woman to say something women will like. And it wasn't as interested in making a character that made sense given the time he had with her. But that being said, pulling back again, like, this movie is very beautiful. And Christopher Nolan clearly cares about, like, the technical aspect of filmmaking. And like we were joking about at the beginning, this was the first film filmed entirely on IMAX 70 millimeter film. Great for him. He had to, like, jimmy rig. Like, the way the cast talks about this sounds very intense. Like, it's like the camera overheats. It only runs like 2 minutes at a time. So they had to build a special like box for it to be moved about the stage with. And then on top of that, it's very loud. So to capture the audio of the actors, they had to then build another box, and they had to this separated the actors from being able to see each other because the camera was literally in the way. So then they had to have mirrors that would like reflect each other's expressions to one another. And it's very intense. Like, it was a lot. And that's interesting to look at as a film piece. And every shot in this film is beautiful, and almost all of it looks like it was shot on scene. Like, it's very obvious that this is not like a heavily CGI'd film.
Well, they were filmed, like the Cyclops scene, they filmed in some cave in Greece. Yeah. Like, you could have easily filmed that on a soundstage someplace. Yeah. And they were like, no, we're dragging everybody to this cave.
Yeah, and the Cyclops was a giant puppet, like, right. Another practical thing. Very cool.
Yeah. It sounds a lot like old school filmmaking, where, you know, in the age of digital filmmaking, you can, you know, set your camera up, it would take 15 hours worth of footage. You know, it's like, and obviously cameras have gotten smaller, where the IMAX, because it's like IMAX and on film, it's like gigantic and heavy. But then you have all of the like problems that come from filming on film, you know, to begin with, of like, okay, you only have so much film. If, you know, you run out, you have to switch it, you know, all of the different issues. And then obviously with editing, it's different on film as well. But so they've done this big marketing push to sort of show how important that is and how different it is to watch the movie on film versus not in film. But the problem is that there's not that many IMAX theaters in America. And so there's been like long lines, and they've been doing screenings at 7 a.m. and at 2 a.m. for this movie, and everything is sold out, and it's just absolutely bonkers what they've done in order to, you know, show the high quality of this production. And I do really appreciate that, like, especially after Sinners last year, which wasn't exactly the same, but like did something similar and, you know, showed in various formats. And obviously that did really well. And then almost won Best Picture. Like, I like that these movies that are super technically well done are earning a lot of money, because I'm so sick, obviously, of having to watch these like terrible Marvel, like CGI slop things. And it's like, drag everybody to a beach. It looks so much better to just put people on the beach. Yeah. And like, yes, it's more expensive in some ways, but also it's like, then you don't have to deal with all of the visual effects. You don't have to be building all of these like green screen sets. Like, just take everyone to the beach, film it, you're done. Like, why are we not doing this more?
I know. And like, and I think, honestly, actors enjoy it more. Like, no, I don't mean that to sound surprising. Of course, they enjoy being like face to face in a real scene and not on front of a green screen. But I think even the like arduousness of like being stuck in a Trojan horse filled with water and like being jostled about sounds horrible. But I think actors they like it, you know, like they like playing it out, you know, and not to say that actors should be tortured and that like sets should be miserable. Like, obviously not. And like things like The Revenant, there probably could have been like better ways to handle filming in the cold than like asking your actors to just be frozen for days on end. But I think in general, most actors would be like, I'd rather do these like practical on set type of things than be cozy in my trailer and like show up on a green screen.
Well, it makes better performances too.
Yeah.
Because if you're having to like do a scene where you're on a boat, if you're actually on a boat doing the scene, then you don't have to think about like trying to act like you're balancing or whatever. It's like, that's all natural. And then you can just focus on the scene. Where if you're on a green screen and you're having to pretend that you're on a boat that's moving, then it's like, then you've got a whole other layer of acting. And at any point, any of those layers can sort of like ring hollow and not true, and then it ruins the whole performance.
So,
and this shot in, I think, 6 different countries. It was in, like, Morocco, Greece, like, Iceland. Like, yeah, it was all over the place. The cast going everywhere.
Yeah.
I would like to talk about Matt Damon for a second.
Okay.
Because I feel like he... Like, he's obviously the main character. He's the one who's on the screen the most. I feel like because he's, you know, just like a, the sort
the
of straight person.
Role. Yeah.
The titular role. Going up with all of these people who get to do more fun stuff and play like weirder characters, that he sort of is unsung. But I thought he actually did a really good job with this.
Yeah.
And I kind of think that that was strong casting on the part of Christopher Nolan to put him in the lead.
Yeah, I liked him. I mean, I feel like pretty indifferent to him as an actor. I don't feel like I have strong feelings either way. But he was good in this. And I do think he managed to disappear in a way some others didn't. But I liked him. And not to move away from talking about the performances, but like the third act of this film is just excellent. Like when he is finally back in Ithaca... And he's trying to figure out how to reveal himself while also sussing out like what the vibes are, you know, a quick vibe check with his son and servants and wife. Like all of that was mesmerizing to watch. And I think it worked out well.
Yeah. The action sequences are also
the
so
final,
good.
Yeah. The final fight was so sick. Like that's. Honestly, watching this movie, I was like, you know, this is a good movie, but I don't feel like I'll ever be like, let's watch The Odyssey. You know, like it's like a one and done type.
Uh-huh.
It's very like, it's not necessarily like entertaining in the way that you can picture yourself like revisiting it. Except that final fight scene I would watch again. I think it was really cool, really well done, and really, really mesmerizing as soon as... And that's like what Christopher Nolan is good at, is he can really capture that through line, like in the final twist, not twist, but like the final ending, like bringing that bow back, that final strum of the string, and then immediately having the shift and everything moves and comes together. Like that was so good. Like that was so good to have that audio cue for everyone involved. And then to have that action where he's like, I will fucking kill you all. I don't give a rat's ass at this point. That was great. I loved it. I think that's where the film excelled. But I do have questions, some cues about the themes Christopher Nolan was attempting to add into this historic epic.
Yes.
Because I've seen people say it's like a critique on xenophobia. And I've seen people be like, it's like anti-war. I've seen it be like, wow, that I was weeping at the end because Zeus's laws, everything. I don't know. I feel like...
The Zeus's law part was confusing to me. I, you know, am not a movie rewatcher, really.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I keep seeing these articles that were like, the twist was blah, blah, you know, like, or like, it was crazy, or like the ending had me sobbing. And I'm kind of like, huh, did I like miss something?
Right.
Because Christopher Nolan's movies are known for being kind of twisty. And there is some play here, especially, with the like Zeus's law and the whatever, where I was a little confused and I was like, okay, maybe I need, if I watch this again, I can sort of like zone in on that, because I think I was kind of yada yada ying that when they were talking about it.
Yeah.
You know, going
it's basically
like,
the golden rule.
Like,
it's
like,
be nice people.
I definitely got the anti-war part of it because at the beginning, somebody or another says like, and you know, we said that the war was for Helen of Troy, but actually it was because we wanted these trade routes. And I think that that for me just like set up the whole thing of, it's like this was 20 years. They were on the beach. All these people died. Like everybody got dragged over there. And at best, it was because one man was, you know, had a lot of hubris and like didn't and wanted to get his wife back.
Yeah.
Even though she, you know, sort of like chose, I don't know, whatever, to go over there. But then more likely than not, this was like a selfish monetary move, which is the reason for most wars. And mm-hmm. all of these people die because a couple of people are able to, you know, convince everyone that they need what they need. I mean, even with the like current Iran war situation, mm-hmm. it's like, this isn't a war about anything other than like trying to get certain people richer.
Yeah.
So I did like that, and sort of how Matt Damon's character, who is a very like dutiful, like I think generally good person, is like has their good qualities twisted by evil people, and then has to sort of realize like, wait a second, I think I did something wrong, which is sort of the same plot of Oppenheimer, if you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that all worked, kind of. The xenophobia thing, though, I was like, that was confusing. And then I also did not understand the Zeus's law of it all, of like, okay, well, because they did the Trojan horse, then like it let everyone sort of be
people.
Bad.
Yeah. Like, well, that's where I was like, okay. Like, and honestly, maybe this was a purposeful choice, because in the original, you know, poem, Odysseus is a total self-righteous,
yes.
like egoist. And so maybe he does think that the entire world's failings land on his, you know, shoulders. But it was just kind of like, okay, dude, like this is a lot of hubris to be like, I have brought on the dark ages
right.
because
yes.
of my strategy. And I felt like that was maybe a little unearned, because bro was like fine doing a lot of like, okay, yeah, there's always a moment where you're like, wait, why are we killing innocent civilians in the street if we were just after, you know, the soldiers in the first place? But, and they try to make him like, all like, oh, we've taken too much from Troy. Like, oh, just, if you just treated us nicely, we wouldn't have burned down your village, but you broke Zeus's law and didn't let us in. So fuck you. And so it just was like hard to like really understand kind of in the end, the whole like reveal with Athena and this conversation with the gods, where he's like, you actually don't want to go home because you feel guilty. Like you feel like you betrayed yourself, but like, why are you taking that out on your wife, son? Like, you know, like, that's like, I was like, and you're taking it out on men by like stalling going home and making these choices just because you don't want to go home. But then the gods part too, where it's like, why are you blaming the gods? Like Athena's there being like, why are you beating yourself up about this? Like, it's just like I was confused. I was confused about who was responsible for what, like as far as the men dying or the journey taking long or like him needing to remember after being with Calypso. Like I was kind of confused about what Athena was saying most of the time.
I was also confused. And I think part of that is that because I had read the book
right.
so many times
like,
in school
yeah.
that I wasn't paying as much attention to some of those details
right.
because I was
yeah.
like, oh yeah, I already like know how this works. Like, okay.
Yeah.
Poseidon gets annoyed that you know, that they killed the
Cyclops
because
yeah.
that's his son. So then we're going to be stuck on the whatever. I was never like, oh, maybe actually Odysseus is like stalling because of blah,
yeah.
blah, blah. Like that never crossed my mind until it was like too
yeah.
late to think about it that way.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think if I had watched this having no idea what the story of the Odyssey was, I would have more, like, insight.
You think it would have helped?
Well, I think it would have helped with untangling the, like, new pieces of it. Because I think I didn't realize that he was trying to do something different until
right.
he did it. And then
yeah.
I was like, wait,
yeah.
well, now I wasn't really paying attention to the
yeah.
early stuff because I thought I knew where this was going.
Right.
Like, I think the thing with the trade wars was
more
was added very
yeah.
early. So I knew to be looking for things that were different in that like war
yeah.
sort of plot line, where the stuff with the gods, I thought was like that kind of came in and came out and
yeah.
was a little bit confusing. Like Zendaya's character, like had nothing to do. Like maybe had like
she was
three
like
lines
saying,
the whole movie.
Why are you mad at us, bro? Like
right.
come on. yeah. And I do think though the editing of this film worked, because you know, yes, as incredibly. An epic, you go scene to scene and it can be kind of arduous. And if you're stuck in one too long, you forget about the others. But they did a good job of like weaving the present action with the flashbacks and the like memories and sort of breadcrumbing that throughout. I really liked. I liked the like, yeah, kind of like the Trojan horse as this like epic trick, but thinking about the reality of being stuck in a horse's belly shitting on each other for a week.
Oh, is, well, like, that I would like to talk more about.
Okay. You didn't like the horse.
No, the this was the one thing that like really irked me the entire movie.
Okay.
So the horse is stunning, absolutely gorgeous. And the opening shot of it like half submerged on the beach, like just beautiful. It reminded me of the foot in Lost, you know, like I was like, this is just absolutely stunning. But then as the movie goes on, I was like, I think we have gone a little too far with this looking good artistically and have lost like any sense of realism, because one, the horse is a weird shape and I don't know how many people could have fit in there like on the best day. And then they're like, oh, we left it on the beach. It half filled with water. Yeah. So you had people like drowning in there. But then also we all had to like shit in there. Yeah. We were in there for like weeks. Then
days.
Then they're like dragging it across. Yeah. Like, all of these like servants are like dragging it across the beach. Like, who knows how far that was. And then they erected it, obviously, in the city. Everybody smells. There's like people jostling around inside. There's no way anybody would have got that into the city without realizing that there were people inside of it. And I know that's like very cinema sinsy of me to be like, well, this isn't realistic. But I was just like, I think there's a reason why the horse and every other sort of like horse in every other Trojan movie has been like a giant sort of thing on wheels. That's almost like a hat, like where everyone could sort of be like sitting and quiet and not be like, bustled around.
Yeah.
And then also it's like, you're like, because they're up in the horse, you're like sort of far away.
But that would be more obvious full of people to me. Like, I think this worked because it is like, oh, okay, this is a cool statue from the gods.
Yes, but I think like if you're an ancient Greek person, like, or ancient Trojan person, where it's not like you have TV or movies or whatever, like you don't know that this is a thing that people are like gonna possibly be sneaking in a giant horse statue, you know?
Yeah, well, that's true for this. Like, I guess, well, I think you think you hear people rattling around, or you're saying,
well, I think between the terrible smell that thing must have had, and also
the, it was like, 2 days. It was 2 days. They were getting ocean water in there, flushing out the.
The dead body smell and the and the poop.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, someone would have noticed something. There were so many people.
I feel like that was the coolest part. I feel like that was the more realistic part, is these people are like, okay, we're just going to stand in here and hope for the best. And it was like 12 to 20 people. I think that was believable.
I mean, I loved the look of it. I loved the sequence. I thought that the Trojan War sequence is so cool. And then when, you know, it's like they open the gates and Agamemnon is there, and there's like, I loved all of that. And I loved all of the imagery of it, but I was a little bit like, okay, I think we might've chosen like style over substance here.
But no, I disagree. I think that's the only horse where I'm like, okay, I can see why the Trojans would take this in as a gift.
Because I think that you are purposefully on this.
No, the Troy horse, the horse in the movie Troy looks ridiculous. It's like, clearly this is full of soldiers. Like, just open a hatch, please. But this is like designed to look like a statue. And it's like, of course no one's going to be in it. Stab, stab, we're good to go. But even then, to have the city people be like, no, y'all need to burn this. This is crazy. And then just being like, no, this makes sense. Of course we'd get a gift from the gods. We won this war. These stupid idiots trying to win us with this dumb horse. Fine. Like, I like that. Honestly, the only question mark I had is that they would be a lot stiffer coming out of that horse.
Oh, well, yes.
I wish they'd have to do a little stretching, you know. They sort of started to show him kind of collapsing on his feet, but then he quickly, you know, stabbed a guy in his throat and was good to go.
Yes.
But no, I enjoyed that part. Yeah. Contrarily.
Boo.
Yeah. But no, I think if we're talking like strength of actors, I would put it up with Robert Pattinson doing his like best snivelly self. And I'll give it to Matt Damon. And then the dog. I want to know more about the dog, because how did they find a dog who was near death and got him to wag his tail one time? Was that CGI? Was that the only CGI shot in the film?
I think that it's just the saddest tail wag. Dog,
it's just like barely a wag. It was like a wiggle. And then he died.
Like, I think you just get a trained dog. Like,
half wag his tail. I feel like there was a string and someone was pulling it, like a little a little puppet tail.
Honestly, as someone who obviously doesn't like dogs, I whenever that part comes up in any sort of like Odyssey, I'm like, oh my gosh.
But they let Odysseus pet him. That was sweet, because I think most of the time he dies before he gets there, or he doesn't get to say hi to him or something.
No, that's the whole point of the dog, is that the dog like sees Odysseus and then dies.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, that's what happens here too. It's right. Just you got to see exactly. Him too. So right. Cute.
So I'm like, I don't understand so what version cute. Of the story you're like, oh yeah, no, Odysseus doesn't get to see the dog. I'm like, that's the only reason why.
Well, I thought Odysseus didn't say hi. I thought sees Odysseus and dies.
And then dies before the
dog. Yeah. And then Odysseus is like, my dog. Also, continuity error. There is no way that puppy turned into that dog. Like, I'm sorry. I need to know the breed, because it was a spotted, short-haired dog puppy.
I was also like a continuity error of like, it's like, okay, the Odysseus and the, I was like, Odysseus looks the same age in the entire movie, basically, despite supposedly being like 40 and 60 or 30 and 50. I was like, I don't understand what the age gap is here, but Matt Damon looks exactly the same in the flashbacks and the flash forwards in the beginning and the
age blindness. I mean, we were looking up Tom Holland's age to and Hathaway's age to Matt Damon's age. Yeah, it's not great.
How old is Tom Holland? Fine. Like 30?
Tom Holland's 30.
And Anne 30. Hathaway is like what?
42. 40?
Yeah. So no, she was not having.
Is not happening.
Matt Damon's 55. 50. Yeah. So that's more appropriate. Yeah. So I guess they should have. So they should have gotten just like an older actress to play Penelope, I guess, is the takeaway.
And also.
Or they needed to get a younger actor to play. Tom. Well, they should have got one of the boys from the Heartstopper.
Joe Locke. Okay,
I want to talk about the Oscars, because Oppenheimer obviously won Best Picture. I think this is a better movie than Oppenheimer by a lot. It's made a lot more. It's making more money. It is more audience friendly. I am wondering, like, I mean, I guess there's lots of movies that haven't come out yet, but I'm like, it feels
impossible. End of Elm Street or whatever.
Well, yes. And Verity, of course. Yeah. All five of Anne Hathaway's movies are going to be Best Picture nominees. I obviously this is going to get a butt ton of nominations. Yeah. My question is, do we think that there is a world in which, you know, this makes $1 billion, it's gorgeous, it has the IMAX, whatever, blah, 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 that it gets Best Picture?
Yeah, I mean, of course there's a world. What are you talking about?
Okay, well, because he just won Best Picture. So I'm like,
like Christopher Nolan is like beloved. It's not even like a Tarantino where people are kind of like side-eyeing, like, okay, well, yeah,
but
he didn't,
but like Dunkirk was really the first movie that he made that like got like
Dark Knight, Interstellar.
No, Dark Knight famously didn't get nominated for Best Picture, which is why they made the Best Picture lineup.
Yeah, 10. yeah, yeah. Okay, but...
And I don't think... Was Interstellar nominated for Best Picture? I don't think so.
Interstellar had to have been.
I don't think the people liked Interstellar all that much. I think Interstellar is one of those movies that, like, in hindsight, people really like a lot.
I need to verify this right away before we go on.
It was nominated for 5...
Oscars.
Yeah, it was nominated for 5 Oscars. Best Score, Best Production Design, Sound Editing, Sound Mixing, and Visual Effects. It was not nominated in any major character.
Well, maybe I'm just like over the Nolan love fest of all these actors being like greatest love working with him.
I'm like
women tripping over themselves to work with
he's
him.
He's only had Dunkirk was the first movie that he made. I guess Inception was also got some.
I don't think the Oppenheimer will influence voters away from this, but I do think Dune 3 coming will be the contender.
I'm also very excited for Wild Horse 9. Have you seen the trailers for this?
No.
The like John Malkovich and Sam Rockwell movie?
No. I saw the trailer for Digger, which also looks good.
Oh yeah, Digger also will be a contender.
So yeah, there's more to come, but I do think obviously this is very Oscar-y. And another point is the score. The score is so dope.
Oh yes.
The music is so cool. And in classic Christopher Nolan, like obsessive compulsive ways, he's like, I only want instruments that would have existed in ancient Greek.
Of course.
And so in ancient Greece. So they like had to make up what they thought some of these instruments would look like, because some of them aren't even real anymore. And it just worked so well. It was so cool. And so that's like a lock-in for sure.
Well, and the person who did the score is Ludwig Göransson, who already has 3 Oscars.
Yes.
This could be his fourth, because he just won last year for Sinners, and he also won for Oppenheimer and for Black Panther.
Yeah. No, it's cool. It's very cool stuff. And yeah, like all the technical stuff, this is a very well-made film. Like that's the thing is I'm like watching it. I was like, I'm not mad about this movie, but I'm pretty like mid about it. Like, I just feel like, okay, yeah, I feel like this will be great for kids in high school to watch along with the story. It has great visuals, cool, something to discuss. But to me, it didn't really feel there wasn't like enough heart or depth to it to make me feel like stunned by it aside from the technical piece.
Well, yes. I mean, I feel similarly. Like I thought this was a very like well executed movie, and it's gorgeous, and you know, like I like the performances or whatever. Like, was there anything in this movie that I felt like spoke to me on a level that I'm like, oh wow, like I am obsessed with this. Like I need to see it a million times.
Like,
no.
This is Dunkirk. It's like, okay, fine.
Yeah, it's like I think that it was like beautiful enough that it sort of like was able to elevate above that level to me. But this is not like Challengers or Sinners or One Battle After Another that I just felt like really like, oh my gosh, like this is
It didn't excite me.
Yes. But I think part of that also might be that I know the story too well, because I do feel like a lot of times adaptations, like even of things that I like, it's kind of like, okay, well, I already knew what was going to happen. So,
but I feel like if I didn't know the story, I would have liked this less. Like, I feel like this was like helped by the fact that I knew a lot of the themes or I knew a lot of the characters and I could like fill in the blanks that were there in the script. Because, like, it's pretty thinly drawn if you think about it. Like, the characters of, like, I don't know. Like, it's like, okay, yeah, you can argue about it. I don't care that much. But I did feel kind of, like, let down by some of the characters and glad that I could always just, I left being like, I want to read that more than I was like, I can't wait to talk about this movie with everyone who's ever seen it and tell everyone to watch it so I can talk about it more.
Mm-hmm.
And Anne Hathaway was bad, so.
No, okay, no. Don't start with me.
Anne Hathaway.
You were coming into this with bad faith.
Anne Hathaway. I was not. I liked Mother Mary. I think she did better in Mother Mary than in this.
Well, yes. But Mother Mary, she had a lot more to do.
Mother Mary, she was. But I'm saying give me a scene of her in Mother Mary. Give me a scene in this. And this is not good acting. I'm sorry. Okay. I will die on this hill, Matt. That's wrong. Like, I'm
You'll
sorry.
You'll die on that hill alone. And it's a bad
empty hill throne.
To die on.
Empty throne. As if I haven't been sitting on it for 20 years.
I want Odysseus. Sorry. Sorry, Shelby, that you just are not in touch with the sort of like emotional side.
But she's flipping flopping on what she's saying her central causes. Yeah, like, who, what is she saying?
People have a lot of emotions and they're not necessarily always.
I think you belong right where you are. Close the door in Mia Goth's face. Sorry, okay, Mia Goth is a little.
I'm like, and actually, let's end on a point we can all agree on. Mia Goth, not good, and also given nothing to do.
Given like, absolutely
like,
nothing.
Given one scene, and it was a bad scene, and she was bad in it. Like,
also, who else was in this that I was like, what? Who was the? Is there like a rapper
Yes, there's a it opens with the rapper as the bard Travis Scott.
That's right.
Travis Scott is in it. The craziest part of this casting is that Benny Safdie
I know.
Is playing Agamemnon, and he's so like not the person who like he is so unformidable in real life that they had to keep the armor on him the entire time and never show his face. Like even when
he
was
in promo,
on,
I'm like, who are you?
Yes, it's crazy. It's like they should have got like they could have gotten like Dave Bautista or somebody to be this like big macho person. And they were like, no, it's got to be Benny Safdie. And because we can't trust him to actually do anything, we have to just keep him in this crazy armor the whole time. Wild.
Oh, wait. I actually, the best actor in this film, the best, no joke, is Hamish Patel.
Oh, well, yes.
He's so good.
Yes.
Like,
he's
that's
so good.
That I want to put that on record. Like, he was so, so good.
Also,
in this.
I don't know if this is just a me thing, but I'm like, he is so hot. Like,
he's so hot.
In every movie I see him, I'm like, oh my gosh. Like,
I know.
In love. And him in this was just incredible. Mm-hmm. And he probably does have like the second most screen time of anybody other than Matt Damon. So.
Yeah, but he's able to communicate a lot without many lines. Like, he's so good in this. And I hope, like, it's like, we keep on neglecting these actors just because they're not our white leading men, y'all. But he is, like, so good in this that I hope it does.
Well, I mean, how dare you forget yesterday the
No, I know.
Starring
I thought he was good in that, too. I think, but it was an underwatched film because
and,
y'all
him
are
and
racist.
Ed Sheeran.
Yeah.
Well,
the world
I watched
needs,
it,
not
so
you.
Don't
say- the listen the rest of the world the general public general movie going public
like, I'm like how can I be racist my boyfriend is unfortunately this is a, like I think Matt Damon obviously getting an Oscar nomination because he's the lead and I'm like I think Anne Hathaway whether you like it or not will
so
be getting an Oscar
ridiculous.
Nomination because she has the most screen time of the women, obviously. But I'm like, the best supporting actor lineup is like going to be a bloodbath because you know that they're gonna unfortunately have to push Tom Holland, even though he's not great. and then you have Robert Pattinson, who's very good. But then also John Leguizamo, I think, is really good in
good.
His couple scenes. And then you have Himesh Patel, who's also good. And
so
then you
good.
Also have Elliot Page. So it's like, ugh, like
the
really?
Only ones who should be in conversation are Elliot Page and Himesh Patel. That's it. I mean, and you can give Matt Damon lead. But I think everyone else, good work. You guys got a lot of, you know, great public attention.
Okay.
But like, please, this isn't it for you.
This is...
I don't think Robert rude. Pattinson needs a supporting actor nom for this. I really don't.
Well, Anne Hathaway does. So...
Anne- You it does not.
Shut your mouth on Anne Hathaway. This
I
is
see. That's what you were mad about. Okay,
excellent performance.
Yeah.
And she will be getting nominated, and so she should
dumb.
Be getting nominated. So, how dare you? Okay, yeah. On that note, we have to end this episode. I have to go, you know, build a wooden statue of Anne Hathaway to leave on your porch to break into your house. I did see the horse. There was a giant horse outside of my theater when I went
cool.
saw it. So
did you get to climb inside it? Maybe they'll start touring.
I think there might have already been people in there, you know?
Oh, it's yeah, not like poop yeah.
And dead bodies.
You're like, something's iffy about those guys. Yeah.
I'm like, I think the Legionnaires outbreak in New York is actually coming from the poop and human fluid seeping out the bottom of this horse statue.
Yeah. Also, okay. I thought What's-His-Face was supposed to say, let me tell you something.
Did he not?
I didn't hear it.
I wasn't paying attention.
Okay. I'll have to verify on
TikTok. We'll have to rewatch. Rewatch.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks everybody for listening to this episode. Truly nothing is coming out next week because nobody wants to compete with the Odyssey. So we will have to really claw around and figure out.
Oh, it's okay because I'm out of time. I'm out of town. I forgot.
Oh, you're out of town.
Yeah, so we're done.
Perfect. Oh, so then we won't be back. So then we'll be back for Spider-Man. I think Spider-Man comes out. Okay,
perfect.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll be back for more Tom Holland.
Tom
Holland.
And more Zendaya. Yay. My thing.
And Anne Hathaway's secret
I'm sure she'll be appearing.
A Doc Ock. imagine. Okay, well, this has been lovely, Shelby, even though you have bad opinions per usual. Thanks everyone for listening. If you agree with me, please, you know, respond to things. If you agree with Shelby, don't. We don't want to hear those responses. You should be silenced.
So rude.
You know.
Yeah, just like Cersei was.
Just like Cersei.
Just like Lupita Nyong'o
just like,
was in
just
this
like
film.
Cersei's bird.
Yeah.
You can not be speaking. just like Benny Safdie, this is a non-speaking role for you. We don't need to hear
you
it.
You look tough, but.
But no opinion. Okay. Thanks, everybody. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Bye.